Welcome back to the Nerdcast Interviews. This is Cripple J, and recently I got to talk with my buddy Brian. I met him at our church, and after talking to him a few times, we learned we had similar interests, similar backgrounds. And once he heard about the podcast, he's been wanting to get on for a while. So called him up, and we talked some comic book movies. We went through our best five comic movies and the worst five we've seen. What's been going on?
Not much. How are the sound levels then?
Looking pretty good right now.
Okay. Oh. You got your surgery done then?
Yeah, a week into it. Today's the first day without painkillers.
That sucks.
Yeah, I've been a little cranky.
Well, prescribed painkillers.
Yeah.
You have your own stash by now, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's growing. All right, so comic book movies. First off, I wanted to know, did you used to read comic books? I know you're pretty into the movies.
Yeah, I think I've always been into comic books. I think that a lot of it has to do with, I grew up with, I would say before, a lot of the, I like Pokemon and stuff like that. There were cartoons and stuff like that, but yeah, comics is kind of where it began with me. It was a hodgepodge of what I do. Anything from G.I. Joe to Marvel, not a ton of DC, surprisingly, but that always skewed a little darker anyway. So.
Okay, so we kind of came from the same area then.
Yeah, it was basically, I grew up, born in 73, so basically you're talking about a very niche-like following where Saturday mornings was, that was it, man. You got up early, you had breakfast, eating bowls of cereal in front of the TV, and you would listen, you would watch from like 6 a.m. to like 11.
Yeah. All right, so how excited were you when the comic book movies started taking off 15 years ago?
It was kind of surreal. I mean, technically you could dive into some earlier ones that that they did. I mean, I was really excited all through growing up with some of the efforts of TV. I mean, you gotta consider back when they had like Spider-Man, or they had a series like that, the Hulk.
Yeah.
You know, the Incredible Hulk with Lou Ferrigno. I mean, geez, that, just that song at the end, "Lonely Man" by, I think it's James Horner, John Horner. That still gets you, man. You know, it's just that moment where you're, you know, it's your childhood, but it's trying to connect with the characters too. So when they actually started coming out with movies, obviously I was elated, because this was our time. This is when we finally started to see the movies we wanted to see.
And they've come a long way over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, big picture, I mean, the first ones, what were some of the first ones you'd consider comic book movies? I mean,
well, it started all with Batman, for me at least.
Okay. So, I want to say, is that 85 or something like that?
It was a little later. It was like 88, I think.
Okay. So, yeah, when they first started coming out that, they were like, they're finally putting real money to that. Because if you grow up with, like, Adam West Batman, you're like, I can kind of see it. You know, he's this. But then all of a sudden they're throwing money at it, and it's in the movies. And that's a big deal, especially to kids, because growing up, movies were big deals. So you didn't have the movie channels that we have now. So when you went to a movie, it was to see a feature. It was to have an experience. But big picture, if that was being the first one, that was the first time that you actually start seeing, again, real money thrown at a licensed figure that, you know, you grew up with. And I don't know, it was just really cool. All
right, so we'll start with our top fives. You want to go first with your number five?
Do you want to go top five or bottom five, or which one you want first?
We'll start top five.
Okay. So top five, and maybe it's for different reasons. Maybe it's for more personal reasons. You're going to see probably a lot of them that coexist with other people's top fives, but maybe not in that order, and definitely not for the same reasons. My number five is Blade. Blade, when that movie first came out, it was a blend of the monster movies. You know, I'd read some comics growing up as far as Blade, and you know, it was really, really good. Mixed with the techno, and then Wesley Snipes as a A-list actor. It was quality. Great storyline, great. I want to say like great movement all the way through. You didn't get lost. There weren't many boring parts. Again, being my age, Kris Kristofferson actually coming back and playing a small role in that. I remember seeing him in different movies growing up, and again, just adding to that experience. Blade was definitely. Was definitely one of those heroes that even if you read a comic book and stuff like that, it was portrayed just a little bit different. But in the movie, the basis that you'd have a Daywalker fighting his own people, basically going after those vampires. So kind of that shepherd feel to it, you know, where you got the shepherd guarding the sheep. And even in the movie, you know, non-vampires are portrayed as that, just sheep, you know, we don't even know about the outside world. So I thought it was kind of cool to have that secondary lining of the story, that there was a world inside the world happening. So, Blade, top five.
They've never been able to capture the same thing with the character in the comics. So they really pulled that one off pretty well.
No, I agree. The problem with it is, now that you've done that, you've been there, you've been to the well, it's hard to go back and say, this is where we're going to make it now. The comic book, you can't do that with, because I think it's really, because it was Wesley Snipes. I mean, if you put anybody else in that role, it's not going to work, you know? You have his enthusiasm for martial arts, so he brings a lot of that into it. But just the way he deadpans it, you know? I don't think he smiles until like the third film or something like that.
Yeah,
he had a grin or something like that, but I mean, as far as just deadpan, he was a single driven character towards wiping out vampires.
Yeah,
and just that, it's that vendetta. When you reach deeper into it, it's the revenge behind him, you know, what they did to his mother and his birth. And so it's kind of cool, especially when you bring in Whistler and how kind of brings it back full circle, where he's adopted by a vampire killer and then taught the ways, and then eventually takes the lead inside the hunting. So
yeah, kind of humanizes him a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you spend any time with him, you'd know he's definitely not.
Yeah. And without that movie, I don't think we get any of the other movies that follow it.
I think it'd be difficult. And people rip the third one, and maybe it's because there's too much, I want to say fun in it. That's why, again, these rankings are subjective, because art is subjective, because story is subjective. I think that too many times you say, I don't like that because of this. And it's like, that's fine, but that doesn't discount the entire movie. From the Blade 3 Trinity, I think that, was it Hannibal?
Hannibal King?
Hannibal King. So he was from the comic books.
Yeah.
But it was with Ryan Reynolds' portrayal, it was fun. It was fun. You enjoyed it. It was almost a snapshot of what he did, of course, in Deadpool later on. But it's one of those things where you got to think about it. It is what it is. It's a means to an end. And then, I don't know, Whistler's daughter, that was a twist. And then Blade 2, that was the first time you really see Norman Reedus.
Yeah.
Which was sweet. Scud, that was cool.
Yeah. All right, so my number five, I have The Dark Knight.
Really? That yeah. far down? Look at you.
Like you, I'm a Marvel guy, so...
Yeah.
Just the fact that a DC movie can crack my top five is a feat in itself. But the way... I think what did it for me was the Joker performance. Like, I love that whole trilogy, but that Joker performance just raised the bar for... Especially when they brought Bane in. It was hard to top what they did in that previous movie.
Yeah. So, are you saying the... Which one? So, you said Dark Knight?
Yeah, that's the second one.
Yeah. So, you're saying that one you like the number five?
Right.
Okay.
And you had strong performances from Heath Ledger's Joker, and that was probably the best Two-Face we've ever seen. Definitely on film.
Yeah. Was it Aaron Eckhart? Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah.
I liked him in a lot of stuff he's done, but, you know, it's never been one of those things where, I think one was like, Thank You for Not Smoking, and then he was involved in a couple other projects that I always forget, but, no, it was good. It was good. And I liked the way that they portrayed, almost like the superhero houses. You know, you basically got the White Knight, you got the Dark Knight, and then, you know, it's like, and you have to protect the White Knight, because if you don't, then the rest of the structure falls. So,
right.
I really like that.
All right. So, what do you got at four?
At four, I have Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Okay.
I almost went with Civil War because of the twist at the end and different things, but to be honest with you, Winter Soldier is one that I can keep going back to. The storyline and just the way it's set up, it's superhero meets Bourne Identity. You know, it's a throwback to the spy thrillers where you can enjoy it. You can basically take your time with it and watch it unfold. And I think in a lot of ways the way that they mapped it out is gorgeous. I mean, I like the original Captain America. He's easy to get along with. You can see the wholesomeness inside of Chris Evans' character, portrayal of him. And for me, I'll be honest with you, there's not many scenes that rival that elevator scene. You know,
yeah.
I still get chills when he goes, "Hey, before we go any further, does anybody want to get off?"
Yeah.
Every time, I'm like, it's on. And then just to see him throwing people around, so... The only thing I kind of struggle with is in the portrayal is there's too many times they don't get the power right. I mean, you see some I think it was in Civil War where he kicks that guy and the guy hits the truck and the truck moves.
Yeah.
But then you'll see other times when he'll like kick somebody and they'll just hit the wall or something. It's like he has superhuman strength and you don't see that portrayed the same way. I mean, technically, depending on how hard he threw that through his shield, I mean, you could cut somebody in half.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like more consistency in it. But for me, Winter Soldier, when you have that outline, the introduction of Falcon, really, really strong performance by Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
I think it was genius bringing her back into the fold because she's, you know, a spy. I mean, it's one of those things where she literally made the movie.
Yeah. See, I had this at number two on my list, and when I explained it to a buddy that wasn't sure about seeing it, I said you could take Captain America out of it, and it would be a good spy movie. I mean, you could very easily insert Jason Bourne or James Bond into the same story, and it still works.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. What was it most about that movie? I mean, the thrill and stuff like that. But did you know going in? You read the comics, but did you know going in about Bucky?
Yeah, I did. I had read that series, not when it came out, maybe a year later. And so I knew Bucky was the Winter Soldier, but I didn't say anything to like Erin when she saw it or the kids when they saw it.
Yeah, I took my wife to see Civil War, but she fell asleep during Winter Soldier. So she like fell asleep right at that bridge scene. So I had to take her back and watch. I made her watch the entire thing just so she could see the reveal that, hey, this is Bucky. And then, because if you go through Civil War and it doesn't mean anything, it does, the right. storyline pay off. So
yeah.
It was good. It was just quality all the way through.
See, my number four was Civil War. And I just didn't think it lived up to Winter Soldier. Everything about Winter Soldier to me was just about perfect. I really like Civil War a lot, though.
Yeah.
It was an Avenger movie. It wasn't a Captain America movie.
Yeah. And I think in a lot of ways, with everybody they brought to the table, and it really was the kitchen sink moment when they had Black Panther, and then they had, they had Crossbones in it.
Yeah.
First time ever. I don't know if they've killed him off long term, but for me, to see Spider-Man inside of his element, inside of the age group, because even with, Tobey Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I always get him and Topher Grace mixed up.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But Tobey Maguire, even Andrew Garfield's portrayal, I really liked him more than Tobey's. I liked is that the Amazing Spider-Man? Is that the two?
Yeah.
I liked that better. I liked it better than the original trilogy with Tobey. But neither one of them were a teenager when they cast, the innocence, the starstruck that you had inside of those moments where you're like, hey, this is a superhero. I'm a superhero, but that's Iron Man. That's Captain America.
Yeah.
You grow up with these people and then you're a superhero. But and I wasn't really offended by the line, the change in the line. I know some people take it and it was like, no, they gotta say, you gotta say,
yeah,
with great power comes. No, come on. We've heard that. We know. It's not. I really like the way that they changed it. They basically went into, I forget the exact line, but it's around the basis of, when you can do the things that I do and I don't, then when bad things happen, it's my fault. And it's like, I get that. You can kind of see that he has a burden, he has a responsibility. And it's hard for a comic book movie to go there because, it'd be great to have superpowers, but the burden of owning that. I think that says a lot about what Marvel's been able to do with story development and going after real writers instead of just Hollywood writers or something like that. Maybe sticking to the comic book ranks. But yeah, I like that one too.
And getting more fans involved. Like, the Russo brothers are fans of Captain America, so they're going to treat it the right way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think when you can find somebody who has, even now when you look at the kind of ownership that Ben Affleck is having inside of DC with the Batman movies, he's gonna do it. He's gonna direct a standalone Batman movie, and he's gonna be successful at it.
Yeah,
be passionate about the character, and he has ownership.
Yes, yeah.
Most important.
So my only gripe with Civil War was the Crossbones stuff. Like, I was expecting more from the character and then not for him to die right at the beginning.
Yeah, I didn't see why he had to die. And I saw even less. You have the arrival of Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah.
General Ross inside of this where he's lecturing these people on responsibility and ownership inside of it, and he says, I'm on your side, but at the same time you're trying to rein him in, you're trying to have the peace accords, you're trying to have them sign it. And the most difficult part of that is just reality. I know we can say the media warps stuff and there's different ways to look at it, but in every situation except for maybe the Ultron one, which Tony caused inside of him wanting to do well.
Mm-hmm.
They prevented this stuff from happening. So I think that them going and kind of leveraging what had happened in the past and trying to make them feel guilty into it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because it's like you destroyed a city, in Sokovia, and it's like, okay, who was it again? Just a reminder, who shot a nuclear missile into New York?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, but I forgot about that. So yeah, I guess never mind. We tried to kill 6 million people inside of a, 40-mile radius. Never mind.
Yeah, they neglected to point that part out.
I don't know. It's sometimes the stuff's so obvious. But again, suspension of disbelief. You have to have a level of ignorance inside of it so the story works.
Yeah. All right, what do you got at 3?
At 3, I have, and I should have maybe placed this higher, but for me, Iron Man, the original, was so good. So good. Because look, I'll be honest with you. Who, before that movie, read an Iron Man comic book? I mean, you maybe had them, but you didn't collect them. You weren't, Iron Man's my favorite guy. Because to be honest with you, he was not a great, great character, you know?
Yeah.
Tony Stark was arrogant and lovable in that way. But the way that they set it up, and you could call it writing, but I think it's directing. I think the way that it came across, Jon Favreau's portrayal of that, using the story. I mean, he sets it up like Tony Stark's. He's a jerk. He's a flat out jerk, and he's arrogant. He's self absorbed. In every step of the way, you're seeing him, and then you start to see how he's more real. I mean, you don't care about the character. Unless he goes through that stuff,
right?
You don't, because there's no journey there. But you see him go through that. You see him become human. You know, I laughed and stuff like that because the times he's in the Humvee and stuff, he's like, "Hey, it's cool. If I take a picture, he's, yeah, it's cool." Meaning, yeah, it is cool if you take a picture with me because I'm cool.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where he's just the most arrogant person you'd ever want to be a part of or talk to. But by the end of it, you can see the change, the movement from the person he was to the person he's becoming. You know, he grew a conscience. He had accountability inside of that from making the weapons into basically, you know, not wanting to be a part of that anymore, not wanting to be a part of the problem. So just all the way through. And a special shout out to the Iron Man 2 for the only reason of introduction of Scarlett Johansson's character. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That hallway scene is still one of the best. But then also when she's fighting Jon Favreau. I forget his character now.
Oh, shoot.
That's Smiley or I don't know. It's something. What's his name? The butler.
I'm looking
Happy.
It up.
There we go.
Yeah.
Happy. So yeah, when he's fighting her and stuff like that, it was good. But yeah, Iron Man, number 3.
That was solid. That was one I struggled with because without that, you don't have the cinematic universe. You don't have Nick Fury showing up at the end of the movie, setting up the Avengers.
Yeah, I like the way they went through it. I mean, if you're gonna build on somebody, Tony Stark's the way to go. He's solid. And now you have the two polarizing images inside of Civil War. But if you don't have the movies before, Civil War means nothing.
Right.
You don't have the character development. I don't care about these characters because again, they don't go anything. They don't mean anything. But again, it's one of those things where now he's the sarcastic person, but you know he's got a good heart, so you're cheering for him.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You need that time to get on board, and I think even the payoff with Obadiah Stane in the end of it was a good fight. It's always one of those things where if they just go 5 minutes longer, most people are like, "Oh, that's too long."
Yeah.
Or we'll go to a movie and it's like, "It's how long? It's 2.5 hours long." I get excited when I see that. It's like, "Oh, can you imagine what they can show me in 2.5 hours?"
Yeah.
That's awesome. Sign me up.
And then it's like, what does the director's cut have then?
Yeah, exactly. It's got an extra half hour in it. Awesome. Let's view it. Let's view it together. Let's have a party. Let's bring people over. Let's point out all the new stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It was good. I liked, again, the Iron Man, the closing. I think that in a lot of ways, the only thing that really kind of frustrated me about Iron Man is you never see him at full strength. Every single time, unless they just portray him as the underdog. The Mark One, coming out of it, he had very limited resources with the first one he made. Mark Two, and then when he was fighting Obadiah Stane, he was at like 11% or something like that.
Yeah.
It's every single time they set him up in the movie that he's the underdog. And man, I want to see him go at somebody at 100% when, all the bells and whistles, I love, you get goosebumps in that first scene when he shows up and he's hitting those terrorists,
Yeah.
Goes through the wall and then grabs that guy out of it. You talk about targeting the many missiles, and then of course the final payoff with the tank scene.
Yeah,
he gets blown out of the sky, which again, it's unrealistic because they don't have guided tank shells like that to be hitting a flying object that far up in the sky. But whatever, again, suspension of disbelief. He falls and hits the ground, and then he turns and he just points one little missile, boom. And just blows the crap out. Doesn't look back. It's almost like that basketball shot with Jordan.
Yeah.
Knows going in. Knows what's going to happen. And he's just walking away.
All right. My number three, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that was a difficult one for me to leave off of here. And really, it was only because I loved it, but it was almost... It was almost too many parallels to Star Wars, to that stuff. I mean, it was a throwback to the space adventure films, but it was like, I got two more ones that are better that I feel ranked just a little bit higher. But what do you like about it?
See, it was kind of that aspect, the whole kind of Star Wars sci-fi aspect, which we hadn't really seen in a comic book movie yet. And at that point, I'd been reading the comics, getting ready for the movie, and the characters just drew me in, and they nailed them.
Yeah.
So that, and then just the little tidbits they threw out there, the Infinity Gem, like actually talking about them, and like Cosmos the dog, and Howard the Duck at the end. Just the little things.
Yeah, it was good. It was funny. Chris Pratt can carry any movie. But it was one of those things where, again, you didn't know. You're fans of Parks and Rec, and you're thinking this guy's gonna carry a movie. And now he's, again, got the franchises. He's got this one, and he's got Jurassic World, and just a lot of comedic talent. I don't know. I thought it was good. I thought it was good all the way through. I thought that, I thought the quote-unquote human side of, like, Rocket, where you can see the struggle behind it. You can see maybe what he's been through inside of... Maybe you can kind of see who he is. But that was one of the funniest parts. It's just Bradley Cooper's portrayal of a raccoon. Because, again, it's... Yeah, you're doing the voice, but what does a foul-mouthed, arrogant raccoon sound like?
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper.
And I couldn't even tell it was him, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, he put a spin on it, like a, like a southern twang, and just lowered his voice a little bit. It was good.
See, and I think with this movie, branching out from the traditional superhero movies has allowed Marvel to do a lot. I never thought I'd see a Doctor Strange movie coming out. And they've kind of, I think, with Winter Soldier and this, they've shown that they can do different things with comic books.
Yeah, I think when you look at the big picture, when you're able to take that 50,000 foot view, you have to have science. You have to have science first, and that's Iron Man. Iron Man came in with the science, and he was able to show what technology can do. And then they did it with strength. They did it with medicine, with science, with again the medicine side of it. Was Captain America, and then you start to see the physical abilities of each character as they develop throughout the universe. It was a stretch. You can't go, hey, we're going to make a Doctor Strange movie. Nope. I'll tell you what you do. You wait about 8 to 10 years after you've introduced other characters, and you can then they can play in that toy box. But the biggest part is, I think with when you talk about now galaxies and outer space, it worked. But again, you can't have that without seeing the other stuff. I mean, even Avengers, you can't have Scarlet Witch in the first Avengers.
No.
It doesn't work. You can't have Quicksilver. He runs really fast. Okay, well, technically, we have a god who's, you know, Thor is, they did his movie, so they understood what he was about, and there was magic in that, but not to the extent that we're going to see inside of Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work without the building blocks. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to understand. It's like, I can't give you a Doctor Strange movie right now. In 12 years, when I've shown you the path and you can see somebody run at that speed Quicksilver does, or you can see the magic or manipulation inside of Scarlet Witch's powers, then you start to see it.
Yeah.
That's really the first time you start to see that. Loki's powers and stuff like that was never mystical or something like that. It was just... it was evil, but it wasn't ever anything other than the scepter, you know?
Yeah. With an infinity gem.
Yeah, exactly. You don't really see the stuff. I mean, you see him jump. What do they call him? Rabbiting?
Yeah.
So basically, you see him, you know, representing different images and, you know, the god of mischief. But you don't have that inside of a Captain America movie. It has to happen inside of a Thor movie, and then then they can play together inside of that common box of Avengers. So, I think again, people don't appreciate the chess game that happened inside of plotting this universe out, Phase 1, Phase 2, Phase 3, unless you really think about, hey, we're thinking 12 moves ahead. I need this to happen first. So, hats off.
Yeah, a lot of coordination there. All right, what do you got at 2?
At 2, I have the Avengers. It was groundbreaking because obviously it came across as one of the... it was the first ensemble movie, you know? I mean, yeah, you had Fantastic Four, but that was a family. I mean, even, you know, the early 2 movies and stuff, but the ensemble, you know? Captain America's a standalone, Iron Man's a standalone, Hulk's a standalone, and now you're bringing them all together again, playing in that same sandbox. It meant a lot to... I mean, look, DC, say what you want, but they weren't even thinking Justice League movie until the Avengers came out, until it, you know, they were going to keep doing their Batman and Superman movies. Maybe they do a second Green Lantern, I don't know, but it's one of those things where I don't think it happens without the talk of the Avengers building to this experience. And there's so many good parts of Avengers. So much humor added to it. You know, it's the first time you see, I think, a real quality Hulk.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at Ang Lee's, and I like what he did. I mean, again, I don't rip anybody for their vision. With the comic book sales and stuff like that, and the growth of the character, and there's again 2 representations because they went with kind of a throwback. You remember in the comic books they used to have the Hulk was able to grow even bigger. So
yeah.
Instead of the eight foot monster that he's described most in the comic books, he could grow as tall as 14 feet. You know. And he got angrier, he got grayer, he got darker. So it was just unusual to see that. And then the more of the Marvel owned property with Edward Norton was good. But I think again, Ruffalo did a good job. I wasn't on board at first. It's one of those things where I was like, Mark Ruffalo, what's wrong? Ed Norton's a genius actor. and you just had him. Why would you switch? And it turned out, you know, it's Ed's fault, Ed's choice. But I don't know. Just so many good scenes in the movie. Obviously, the big payoff with the Hulk and Loki.
Yeah.
At Stark Tower. I mean, that's still, yeah, still rewind that. I still stop and rewind that moment where he's just arrogant and then the Hulk just beats the snot out of him. So, what's your number two?
I had Winter Soldier.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, so what was it? We talked about Winter Soldier a little bit, but what was it about Winter Soldier that really separated itself from the first one? Because, again, it was origin story and stuff like that, but they still kind of went back.
Yeah.
What was that gear that they went through to be able to get you to the second one?
It was a story with it. I mean, it was just a well-paced story. And, like I said, you could be a non-comic book fan and enjoy what was happening there. You could not know who Captain America was, and it would still be an enjoyable story.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they just had good acting all around. I liked the way they kind of explained the Security Council a little bit, went a little more into it. And it was just a different movie. It wasn't your standard comic book superhero movie.
Yeah, I like the kind of the, I don't really call outs or shout outs, but I like the some of the people they use you recognize from other movies. Like one of the Security Council people was the guy from the train station in The Matrix 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. I really liked his character. He was a warm character, and to see him on there, it was kind of nice. And then obviously the payoff at the end when Scarlett Johansson's one of them, you know, jumping in to save the day, and then of course the reveal of Nick when he gets there. But yeah, it really was just a quality movie. I mean,
it introduced Falcon, who's kind of been an underrated character for the movies.
Yeah, and I think in Civil War, when the introduction of Ruiz Redbird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. And the fact that it wasn't a real bird, the fact that it's, again, technology, and Scarlett Johansson's, what, his unwillingness to call it that.
Yeah.
It was just sweet. It was a good take on somebody's origin and again, making it fit. Because, again, I don't think it works with a Falcon. This is my Falcon that flies around. Again, just a wholesomer time when that would have worked. Not now.
Yeah. And it kind of takes from the realism of what they're doing for a superhero movie.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so what's your number one?
So I'm going Dark Knight. I know it's the cliche, but what Heath Ledger did for the Joker, for me, was scary as crap. I mean, Jack Nicholson is a good actor, and he did a good job. But it wasn't that thing, you know. He played it kind of scary. He played it more like the Batman 66, the Adam West kind of character.
Yeah, Cesar Romero.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It was okay. But Heath Ledger, to come where he came from, because I wasn't on board. It was like, I think when they announced it, I think I had, within the last 30 days, watched A Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
I feel like, that guy's going to do it. Let me go back and watch 10 Things I Hate About You, because this guy cannot play in a comic book. This guy cannot do this. But you look at how he modeled his character. I have a background in psychology. I was a paramedic for 4 years and did an additional 6 years inside of psychology, abnormal psychology. And I'm very comfortable with most personalities, personality disorders and psychosis and stuff like that. What the character for Heath Ledger, his portrayal of Joker, scared the crap out of me. It made me uncomfortable to be around. It's almost that chess game. There's a lot of thought process that goes into it. I know he says he's an agent of chaos, but look, the payoff was, if any part of the plan breaks down, Batman wins. You look at even, you know, Harvey Dent and Rachel and knowing where they are, and he has to get captured. So, you know, for any of this to work, the guy's got to get captured at the police station with the phone sewn into, with the bomb sewn into his chest.
Yeah.
You know, so much of this stuff has to happen. It's very methodical inside of that. You know, I think we start to see the mind of the Joker in the beginning of the movie when they go with the bank heist, you know?
Yeah.
And just, hey, as soon as you're done with your job, kill him. As soon as he's done doing his part, you kill him. And he gives that domino effect to everybody on his crew. And you literally see him walk away with the big payday out of there, you know, taking the money from a mob-owned bank and getting away scot-free.
Yeah.
Killing his entire team just by setting up the domino effect. So I love that. I love his, again, everything about it. But even the, what was that saying? He said, madness is a lot like gravity. A lot of times it just takes a little push. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. So I think that when you look at big picture, what he was able to do inside of that, he showed up. He showed up Batman, you know. He went above and beyond. And between the voice and the laugh, and for me, again, you look for that payoff scene. What's that scene that made it work? And it was the interview room, you know?
Yeah.
He's the interview room where they go at it, and it's like, well, it's only like 5 minutes worth of dialogue, but it is the payoff of the movie.
Yeah, that's, I felt bad for having it at 5, but like I said, I'm more of a Marvel guy, and these other movies kind of hit it more with me, but that's a movie that I could sit and rewatch all the time. Actually, any of the 3 movies in that trilogy, I could.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a homage to Nolan. I mean, God, he played it, again, I don't mean to use the exact same words that Kevin Smith used, but he did, he played it so earnest. I mean, the process of this has to work, you know, this has to work. Your training has to happen, and for any of this to work. So, it, you know, I am tired of seeing origin stories and the flashbacks and stuff. And even in the new Superman Batman, there's still that one scene, I guess, to get the Martha payoff. But I'm just, when you bring in that, when you're able to show inside of this is a real person living in a real city. And it's not the Tim Burton fantasy world where it's just this weird architecture theme. It is a real person living here, and this is how he got his training, and this is the effect it has, and, you know, League of Shadows, and you see everything, and you can see the progression of the characters. So, I've always loved Batman. He's been one of my favorite characters, and it's a toss-up. If you gave me the choice to have, you know, a ton of money and my parents killed and I can fight crime, it's, you know, it's a coin flip for me. Anyway, but it's such a good character. But Heath Ledger, he matched him. He matched and exceeded Christian Bale's portrayal and movement. You know, it was beautiful all the way through.
Yeah. And I say the one downside of the whole trilogy is the executives at Warner think all their movies have to be dark and brooding now. So you get Man of Steel, which was a good movie, but it was too dark. And then you have Batman vs. Superman, which is super dark.
I will say this, though. As far as people's parents, now granted, if we were going to come up with top 5 parents for superheroes, you know, I like Martin Sheen as Andrew Garfield's Batman or Spider-Man.
Yeah, Uncle Ben.
He was good. I didn't like the guy in the original one. I forgot his name now. He's actually more famous, but for me, the Superman movie, Kevin Costner, who'd have thunk, you know? It was like, you start to care about it. And I love, again, it's probably why you're a Marvel fan, but you look at the differences between Kevin Costner's character and then somebody like, when he goes, you know, great power, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
And then you got the Superman one with Kevin Costner. He's like, what am I supposed to do, Dad? Let him die? And he goes, well, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like, seriously? That's okay. That's a little cold, but whatever.
Yeah. And the difference is, too, that Uncle Ben didn't really know that Peter Parker had those powers, whereas Pa Kent is trying to protect Clark from people trying to exploit him.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I guess, yeah, you try to protect your kids, but when you're trying to challenge them to go above and beyond, and then, they can actually do it, kind of scares the crap out of you.
Yeah.
Good point. What's your number one?
I got Deadpool.
I thought about this. I did. I almost went Deadpool in the top three because it is another level. Go ahead, man.
All right. Well, I've been reading Deadpool for years. And so when I found out he was going to be in Wolverine Origin, or the X-Men Origins Wolverine, I was so excited. And they got Ryan Reynolds, and it started out perfect. And then they just butchered the character. And then when that leaked footage came out, I was just floored. I'm like, they nailed it. They have to make this movie now. And that has probably been the most accurate portrayal of a comic book character I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, he's just fun.
Yes.
So much fun. You know, the vulgarity and, you know, I think a lot of it, you don't need the nudity in there, but the stuff is like, it's so spot on. It's so spot on, and then just the fourth wall breaks and the consistent understanding of exactly where he is, his relationship to other people, and
yeah,
almost the reluctant superhero. I mean, he's just, he has the powers, but it's not as you want them to be. It's not what you meant it to be.
Right. And then seeing, like you said, the fourth wall breaking, the taking the shots at his other characters he's played, I just loved it. All right. Having the figure of the Deadpool from the Wolverine movie, and don't make the super suit green or animated.
Yeah, for me, the payoff is when Colossus handcuffs him and he's pulling him back, and he goes, "You're going to go talk to Professor Xavier." And he says, "McAvoy or Stewart?"
Yeah,
timelines are so confusing. It's just, oh man. To have the realization inside of a movie that you're in a movie, but then you're also, you know, superhero landing coming up, you know, that, every bit of it.
And then to turn around and watch Batman versus Superman, and he does the superhero landing. I think I started tapping Erin, and I'm like, superhero landing. She's like, shut up.
I think, again, the hardest part of that is downshifting. Because you have Deadpool come out, and you're so up. You're so like, 2016, we're going to see some stuff this year.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. And then you just downshift into a monster of a movie that's just emo on steroids. I wanted to listen to Chemical Romance and maybe cut myself a little, but it's so dark to watch this movie. It's too dark. Why would you? But anyway. Yeah, Deadpool, top quality.
Yeah,
and again, it's fun. They're gonna do it again. And it's gonna make a boatload.
Part of me was upset it did so well because I was hoping eventually Fox would just give up on the movies and give them back to Marvel. But with that, they're not gonna do it.
Yeah, and I think you start to get more crossovers now. Again, I think if you bring Cable into this, or you bring Wolverine into this,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it inside of a new, because it really, I mean, there was there was Negasonic Teenage Warhead, and there was Angel Dust.
Yeah.
You know, and Colossus. But I mean, other than that, you had the Healing Factors, and you had the other guy who couldn't feel pain. It's not really a superhero movie per se. So now, when you start to bring other characters into it that have fantastic powers and strengths, and just to see his reaction to that, and him again getting to play in that toy box, that's going to be an awesome time.
Yeah. All right. So, bottom. What is your number five worst superhero movie or comic book movie?
This is going to be weird because again, art is subjective, and you know you're not gonna hear Fantastic Four from me. You're not gonna hear Green Lantern. You know, I can watch those movies again. The Fantastic Four one I just watched a couple weeks ago, the newest one with whoever. They were difficult, and again, the payoff was lacking. But you could see where somebody was trying to do something, and it was entertaining. You know, again, between the science of it and just the walkthrough. But for my number five, I have Ghost Rider 2, Spirit of Vengeance.
See, I didn't even go see that one. Because yeah. I was so disappointed with the first one.
Spirit of Vengeance was... Look, the first one was difficult to watch because it was so campy, you know? I did like seeing the Ghost Rider on film.
Yeah.
You know? You start to... And then you got the payoff with... what's his name? Sam... from Roadhouse.
Oh, I can't think of his name now.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott.
But you get the payoff of seeing him as the older, you know, cowboy, Hellraiser,
Ghost Rider.
So I really, again, it was painful. The first one wasn't bad, but the second one drug on me. It was like, this is weird. And maybe it's because, and I'll be honest with you, all his powers and stuff, the pendant and stare and stuff, I think that in a lot of ways, he's pigeonholed. He has to battle evil, and people with powers aren't inherently evil. Evil spirits are. So I mean, he's stuck fighting these characters who are in nature demonized or devilish, and it's difficult to really get behind that person because, you know, I think the best hero and villain relationships, you're able to see them, the yin and the yang. I mean, you saw that again in Dark Knight. You mm-hmm. saw how you start to feel for that character. But with this character, you didn't bond with it at all. You didn't get into it, and it was pretty miserable all the way through.
Yeah. So I went the easy route and took Green Lantern for number five.
What'd you do?
Green Lantern, number five.
That is the easy route.
I didn't mind Ryan Reynolds as a role. He wasn't my first choice, but it's just the story was lacking. They take one of the biggest influences on Green Lantern history in Parallax and turn it into a cloud that's destroying a planet. And that just drove me nuts.
Yeah, I guess with Parallax, his introduction, again, it wasn't... again, what's the offshoot? I don't even like that actor. I didn't enjoy him in anything I've ever seen. But the guy who plays the demon spawn of Parallax...
Yeah.
It was fun. When you go to Oa and you see the Green Lantern Corps and, you know...
Yeah.
You see Sinestro before he becomes evil. You see that world.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. And then he fights Parallax, and again, it's just a big cloud of mush. And
yeah.
It's not a good fight. I mean, I think we saw that inside of, like the first Fantastic Four was okay. It was good.
Yeah.
It was good. The second one, when they have to fight Galactus, I mean, if it was the big form, it'd be something different, but it's still... He's outmatched, you know? It's got to be Silver Surfer that comes in there and defeats him.
Yeah.
But again, it's just a big mist. And Parallax is the same way.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. There's no form. Again, I think it goes down to you don't relate to the villain.
Right.
What they want, what's their motivation. So you can't get on board with why they're even fighting.
Right.
What's world domination? Okay, no, I get that. But why?
Yeah, and I've just never been tied to Green Lantern characters before, so I was excited to see it, hoping for bigger and better things, but it just... I was unfulfilled.
Yeah, it did lay flat.
All right, what do you got at 4?
I got Kick-Ass 2. I felt that they threw the movie together. I liked the first one.
Yeah.
I liked the first one. I think it was original. It was good because you had an actual teenager struggling to find their place in this world. You have somebody who's wanting to be a part of doing good or serving good, and ultimately he gets to be brought into that world, and you see the relationships with was it Big Daddy?
Yeah.
And Hit Girl?
Yeah.
Great relationship. I mean, you can see that, the honesty, the love, and the second one was literally, how many people can we get on here? Jim Carrey, let's get Jim Carrey. And then that the big Russian woman, I don't know what she does, but they were phoning it in. I don't even know if they got real writers. It felt like a computer generated Mad Lib, where basically you're just filling in the story about what's going to happen to the characters. And again, I don't care. I don't care about the characters. So, yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of it going into it because I didn't like the ending of the first Kick-Ass, and that's because they changed it from the comic. Like, I'm not a stickler for that stuff, but the comic was just so perfect.
And what was the original ending?
He didn't get the girl. He actually got pics of her screwing another guy.
Oh, okay.
And just the whole showdown with the mob family and the... What was it? The helicopter gun?
Jetpack or whatever.
None of that stuff was in there. So it just... Like, he saved the day, but he didn't get the girl, and he just went back to his life.
Yeah, I don't know. It was flat for me.
Yeah.
What do you got, number 4?
Number 4, I got X-Men Origins Wolverine. Oh, the first half of the movie I loved. It was with the Weapon X program and taking the team of guys and trying to find the adamantium. I liked all the characterization. And then it all went downhill when he left the team. And then, like, they introduce the Hudsons as the old people and giving Deadpool every mutant power they can try to think of and put the swords in his arms. And it was just too much.
Yeah. I think we're right on the same track. I lost interest in the second half of the movie. I was still there. Again, it's a superhero movie, and you do, in the second half of the movie, get to see kind of the earliest version of Cyclops.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if it was Kitty Pryde. I know you get to see...
They had, like, Emma Frost, and you get to see Gambit for a while, which I'm not a fan of that character, so it didn't really... I didn't care for that.
Yeah, and was it Tyler Kirkhurst or whatever his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I still had a bad taste in my mouth from John Carter. And frankly, John Carter was not a bad movie. It was just the way that they hyped it up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't everything that they said it to would be, but I'm fine with that. But don't hype it up like that. You know, I think Suicide Squad was great because I came in with realistic expectation that this is going to be a movie about these characters. And again, there's not going to be that singular person in the room that you're rooting for. It's just, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we don't view movies that way anymore. We're always looking for, this has to happen. We have our own expectations. And again, critics can go to hell, but it's one of those things where you don't understand what we're looking for. And I think, again, it was Kevin Smith who said, you have to go see it. You have to go see it. Yeah. If you don't go see this and it bombs, they don't make the next movie. And we never get to Deadpool unless somebody goes sees this movie.
Yeah.
And but Origins, to be honest with you, it was good. I liked it. I can go back and watch it again. I just have a real problem with the continuity stuff.
Yeah. You know,
Sabretooth, okay? Well, this is early on in the relationship. Sabretooth is his brother.
Yeah.
Okay, I get that. Later on, when Sabretooth is driving the truck in the first X-Men movie, and, you know, he's fighting him, number one, it's not even the same likeness.
Yeah.
Two, they're not brothers. He tries to kill him multiple times. And it's just, it's too difficult. Why would you have that many, kind of just, do whatever they want to.
Yeah, exactly. Because in that first X-Men, it's like they barely even knew each other. And I get the mind wiping and stuff would make it hard to remember, but I would think Sabretooth would have toyed with him a little more, knowing who he was.
Yeah, and they played Sabretooth as a mindless beast, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have the tactile, you know, emotional hold that Liv Schreiber had inside of his role.
Yeah.
This was a smarter person. He can't live for that long. And again, the body types are wrong too. I'm just nitpicking now, but I liked the first half of it a lot. Second half did not pay off. Even the first introduction of the Blob, you know, Frank Dukes. So that was a good scene. The first one when he goes down and he puts his fist inside of the tank and blows it up.
Yeah.
And, you know. But Ryan Reynolds, it was really good. Yeah. I really enjoyed the beginning of it, and then the end of it, I'm not there.
Yeah.
I'm
just not there. All right, what do you got at three?
It's going back a little bit, but Steel.
All right.
Shaq.
Yes.
So, and this was, you know, this was Shaq trying to get a movie. That's what it was.
Yeah.
It was somebody getting a movie. You got the main character coming home from you know, army tour, and him wanting to fight in his neighborhood. You know, I'm not sure if everybody knows the story of Steel, but it's a good comic. It's, you know, it's somebody trying to make a difference.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't see it right away, and Kazam came out and everything else, and it was just, it rubbed me the wrong way. He wasn't a good actor.
Yeah.
It's not one of those things where you can honestly say that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a good actor when it comes to action films. You know, he was a bodybuilder as a former job. But Shaq, every time I saw him in something, Steel or whatnot, he was a very good basketball player.
Yeah.
And that's it. Don't do that. I mean, the special weapons and stuff, and it was just a huge suit of armor. Again, I thought it made me hollow.
I've never actually sat down and watched the movie from end to end.
Well, then you are blessed.
It was one of those things when it came out, it's like they were trying to bank off the death of Superman in the comic, and here's this character from it. We can try to make it into something that it wasn't going to be. And so instantly I was just like, I'm not even going to bother with it.
Yeah. Is that running with the same? I know they had the original Death of Superman, and then they had the three or four people show up.
Yeah.
One was, I think, the son of Krypton or something like that.
Yeah.
And he had the red lenses, and that was one of those offshoots where they were like, let's try something new.
Yeah. Yeah, because they did Superboy, Steel, the cyborg Superman, and then, yeah, the son of Krypton.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a stretch. It was a stretch to do that.
All right, for my number three, it's probably just because it's recent, but Batman vs. Superman.
Really?
Yes.
It's the worst movie ever.
Yeah. I really wanted it to be a good movie. And I went in with an open mind, even after hearing everything. Low expectations, and it just... I just couldn't get into it. It felt long. Like, you know when you're in a really good movie and it's long, but you don't care because you're still pulled into it. I didn't have that with this. And every little story arc that they were trying to wedge in there just felt incomplete. Like, everything was short, and then I didn't feel fulfilled at the end of the movie with all these different arcs they had going.
Yeah, I for me, look, my wife was out of town when it came out. I forget where she was, but I went and saw it after work one night. Wasn't the midnight release, but it was like a 9 o'clock show. And I'll be honest, I fell asleep like 7 times.
Yeah.
It was like time traveling. I woke up and there was a new part of the movie, and I would sit up in my seat and I would try to stay awake. I don't think I would have had that problem with a movie that really engaged you throughout. Again, a 2.5 hour movie that tells a good story that you can follow, I think doesn't have that effect on you. I will say that I had enough shining moments in it for me that between finally seeing a Batman that I can get behind, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with how he was trained or how he grew up. And again, the League of Shadows, a master of martial arts and over 50 types of hand-to-hand combat, and just that Olympic level athlete. I think that fight scene at the end when he's going to rescue Superman mom, I think it plays well. I think, again, when he jumps through there and he smashes that guy's head into the floor, or he throws that guy into the wall, and it plays.
Yeah.
You can see him get shot, and he's obviously bulletproof, which is, you've never seen that before. You always see the guy get shot or, you know, body armor and stuff like that. But, you know, he gets stabbed, and then he takes the knife out of him, and he stabs the guy back. And it's like, okay, well, this is new.
Yeah.
This is new. But it was easier to get behind because you could, again, suspend your disbelief inside of the character's development. I think you see him start to go the straight and narrow. I'm after he has an experience with Batman and, or I'm sorry, with Superman and Wonder Woman, he's not out there branding anybody anymore or killing, because he obviously killed some people.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess it was, again, an exit from what we expected for Batman. But I think going forward, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like his portrayal in Suicide Squad, and there was just a lot of redeeming. But wow, number three?
Yeah.
Well,
the Lex also. Lex just completely...
That did ruin it for me.
Yeah. He totally took away from the story.
Just the whiny characterization of one of the great masterminds that challenged Superman in the comic books and was a formidable person, and not just a crazy teenager who was a, you know, tech billionaire or something like that. It didn't play well.
Yeah. All right, what do you got at 2?
Catwoman.
Oh.
Catwoman for me was again one of those painful ones to watch. You had a storyline from Batman 2, Batman Returns, or so Batman Returns, where you have Michelle Pfeiffer, one of the first on screen ever of the character, and she's great in it. Michelle Pfeiffer's amazing in that movie, where you start to see her relationship with cats and stuff like that, and you know, I like that. But then Hollywood goes, well, if she was that good, let's try to sexy it up. Let's go. Holly Berry is great right now. We could totally throw her into that, and I think it'll work. What do you guys think? And then a bunch of yes men in the room go, yeah, that's totally a good idea. Let's do that. It sucked. It was horrible.
Yeah. I tend to go to every single one of these in the theater, and that was one, another one like Steel, where I'm just like, I'm not even gonna bother.
Like, yeah, it was painful. It was it's like taking a part of the Batman lore, you know, and doing a movie on it. Okay, you can't go to the Rogues Gallery on the Flash, and I don't want to see a Captain Cold movie.
Yeah,
I don't want to see a standalone Captain Cold movie. Why? Just because she's cute? We're gonna do this? Throw money at it? She's an A-lister. You can get Leonardo DiCaprio to come in and do again Captain Cold, and it's not gonna be good.
Right.
There's no redeeming parts of it. Oh, but her struggle. No, shut up. Just stop. What do you got for two?
X-Men 3.
Ah, that's a difficult one.
There were so many things wrong with it. I mean, if you're going to do a Dark Phoenix saga, I understand it's hard to, at this point in comic book movies, to incorporate space and this Phoenix force it takes control over. But they kind of like shoehorned it in, and then you take the death of Cyclops off screen, and I don't know. There's a lot of mischaracterization of the secondary mutants in it. It was fun to see Colossus power up for the first time in it and start fighting, and see Kelsey Grammer's beast. But then on the flip side, you had a bad Juggernaut. You had Multiple Man, which is one of my favorite secondary characters, and totally miscast them. Don't even expand on what makes the character interesting. He's just a goon.
Yeah, I think that what they did there, where they're trying to fit too many pegs in one hole.
Yeah.
The same thing with Spider-Man 3. Where again, it's too many people.
Yeah.
But if you are going to use these, use the people correct. Use them in a way that is entertaining and helps the story along. I did like the rescue scene, you know, where they were going after Mystique.
Yeah.
You know, in the introduction of these people, but Vinnie Jones as Juggernaut was horrible.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like horrible. It was just, they could have, I mean, there's some redeeming qualities about the character, and you know, I don't think they got that. But the continuity behind him running through walls to get that the child that can take away powers, you know.
Yeah.
And you're in his radius, he'll take away your ability to do to use your powers. He's not a mutant.
Yeah.
He's not a mutant. So, walk me through again how he does. He takes away from mutant powers, and then he also, that gem in your chest.
Yeah.
That's mystical. Yeah, he takes away that too. So, you know, whatever.
Let alone, it could have been a cool storyline of having him and his stepbrother, Professor X, interact.
Yeah, and they did nothing with that.
Yeah.
They did nothing with that. And the fans know. Fans know. When you go see that movie, they're stepbrothers. They know each other. It's gonna be good.
Yeah.
Nope. Not paying homage to anybody. I did like the scene when... you know, kind of a throwback. You see the younger Eric and Charles going to see...
Jean.
Yeah, going to see Jean when she's younger.
Yeah.
And then the follow-up after that with Wolverine coming through the house, you know, looking for Professor X. And then, of course, just demolishing him into a million pieces. Just, it was a cool scene because you got to feel it. But again, continuity. At the end of the movie, when he shows up in the body of the person that was brain dead.
Yeah. With Moira MacTaggert.
Yeah. he still looks like Charles.
Yeah.
He took over that body. And oh, by the way, that body must have been paralyzed too. you couldn't even get a break on that. I mean, the guy's laying in the hospital bed, but he's going to learn how to walk again.
Yeah.
He just no. It happened to this same. It was the same thoracic break, so you're still going to be paralyzed. But again, you're going to assume all your other features, including the way you look. So, bonus.
Yeah. All right, what do you got for number one?
I thought hard on this one, and to be honest with you, I don't know if you've seen it, but the worst movie for me is Superman 4.
Okay. Quest for- yeah.
It was hands down just a horrible movie all around. You know, you had the second one, which you could argue again is the basis for the newest movie. You know, you have the General Zod and the other people show up. Again, it was just three of them, but they come from the Phantom Zone. They show up. And it's a good movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have Christopher Reeve, the consummate professional inside of playing that role. And even in the third movie, it was a stretch, but it had what's his name? Richard Pryor. It was difficult to wrap my head around it, but he creates the machine that is supposed to kill Superman. So it's getting harder and harder each time. But the fourth one was the biggest piece of crap of all because it dives into, well, we're going to make a Superman. And we're going to do it by taking a sample of Superman's hair, which, again, they have it on display. I think it was a Smithsonian or something like that. They cut it. Even though it's, like, stronger than steel.
Yeah.
So they use the scissors to cut it, and then they take that sample with the genetic material, and then I forget how they cut it, but they send it on a rocket ship into the sun. And this villain, again, who has no drive whatsoever, again, it's not just a monster, you know? Look, I'll get into this real quick, but the reason that Doomsday works is in the comic book setting, when you get to see the development inside of his storyline, you start to feel for him. You start to, it's like, so this alien, you know it, right?
Yeah.
So this alien basically creates you. And then puts you through total hell to the point where you die, and then they clone you from that piece of genetic material at the end. So every single time you build up immunities to what kills you, and basically it's torturing something, it's torturing a creature until it gets to the point where it's literally developing, shaping, and molding because of the torture. So you can get behind that, especially. You know, you can see the anguish. But in Superman 4, I don't care. Because the guy comes out of nowhere, and he's got super sharp claws, and he can break through Superman's skin, and they fight. And the only way to get rid of him is to put him in an elevator where the sun can't reach him, because, you know, he's going to diffuse that fast.
Yeah.
Cloudy day, I'm going to fight him, because we saw what happens when he kind of gets inside and loses. It's the robot running low on a battery scenario. He literally droops over and starts talking. It was ridiculous. So, for me, that was the worst movie ever. And even, I think that was the same one where they kind of introduced the Red Kryptonite, or Superman gets drunk or something like that. I don't know. It's kind of like a car accident when you're a child. It's just, you block out certain pieces of it. So I don't remember all of it, but I just remember it was horrible.
Yeah. So I almost went the given route and said Batman and Robin. But this movie drove me so nuts that they changed so much of it from the comic, which I felt was perfect, and it was League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh.
It was just a flaming turd.
You know, but, okay, do you know why that worked for me?
Why?
I hadn't read the comic.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, honestly, I hadn't read the comic, and I was like, this is pretty good. You got James Bond, you know, you got Alex Quartermain, you got Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
So many of the pieces, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, mm-hmm. you know. But to your point, what was the differences between the comic book and in the movie?
Well, the whole Tom Sawyer thing just instantly killed it. Because it's like they took these British characters and they feel like there's not an American one, so an American audience isn't going to connect with it. So we'll make Tom Sawyer a secret agent and insert him into it.
That was, what was that character? Johnny Lee?
Who was that? I can't think of who it is right now. That was just the first piece of many things for me. The comic book was a very, very dark comic.
Yeah.
And they lightened it up way too much for the movie. Like, to the point where in the comic, the Invisible Man turns on them. And as revenge, Mr. Hyde ass rapes him.
What?
Yeah. And it was kind of a shocking moment in the comic. And it made me laugh. But those were the type of things that they had to take out for a movie like that.
Shane West.
Yes.
On IMDb.
Yeah, I just got it pulled up.
Yeah, I don't know. It had some redeeming factors at the same time. Yeah, I can see that. Maybe I watched it too many times on TBS. But I think, again, it was assisted by me not reading the comic.
Yeah.
Because it did have some... I didn't like just having everybody fit nicely into a package. The Tom Sawyer thing was dumb.
Yeah. In the comic, Mina Harker is like the leader of the team. And in the movie, they kind of forced Sean Connery to be a co-leader with her because it's Sean Connery. Trying to think of what else were some of the big differences that just I couldn't stand. Like, if I see that movie on, I usually pass on it.
Yeah. One of the things I did like was The Invisible Man. Is that Skinner?
Yeah.
Yeah, that character, I think he's Scottish.
Yes.
He was actually, he played, what was his name? It was the second vampire movie with Kate Beckinsale. He played Marcus.
Okay.
And Marcus was trying to get his brother freed up, and his brother was imprisoned, and then Marcus was his brother was a Lycan. And then he was one of the main vampires, senior vampires, I don't know what they're called, but yeah, he was one of the three that slept. And then the second one I don't even remember what the movie was called. What were those called? I keep wanting to say Nightwalkers, but...
Underworld.
Underworld 2.
Yeah.
He was in. I liked him in that. Other than that, I'd never seen him before.
Yeah.
I always get that guy... the Shane West, I always get him confused with whatever he did before. And it's not Johnny Lee Hooker. It's just, who's the guy that played Zero Cool in Hackers? I think that was like 88 or something like that.
It wasn't Matthew Lillard, was it?
Not Johnny Lee Miller.
Yeah, Johnny Lee Miller.
Johnny Lee Miller. No, Matthew Lillard played... serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really like... again, you can see Johnny Lee Miller now on really good on Elementary.
Yeah,
playing Sherlock. Just quality actor, but hadn't seen him in anything in a long time. I don't know what made me think of that. Maybe just all British young actors.
Yeah,
did the same thing.
He'll be showing up again in Trainspotting 2.
Yeah, he will. That's they got some actors coming back for that one.
Yeah, they do. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's gonna be a good one. There's a bunch of ones coming out, but anyway, yeah. So that's my top five, my top ten, or I'm sorry, bottom five.
Yeah.
Top five. And again, I think, again, it's subjective when you get a list like that. Not everybody's going to agree with mine, but if you go back and watch them, I guarantee you'll hate the ones that there. I mean, there was a couple ones that it got close. There was a couple that I had to kind of push out of the way, out of the top five, like Hellboy 2.
Yeah.
Hellboy 2, not the Red Army. Something Army.
Shoot, yeah, I can't think. Golden Army?
Golden Army. Because the first one was good.
Yeah.
First one was good. I like Ron Perlman in that role. It works.
Yeah.
It works. Yeah, again, the anti-hero. I really like the sub-characters, too. I don't really like I never really liked the... what's her name? The one from...
Selma Blair.
Yeah. From Cruelty or whatever it was.
Cruel Intentions, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like her, but Perlman, man, he makes that work.
Yeah.
He was lobbying for Cable.
Yeah, I could see him. I could see him in that role.
Yeah, salty, older man, that voice. Yeah. Him and Ryan Reynolds kind of rifting at times.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I think that would work pretty well. Yeah, I had a few that I kind of moved around a little bit too. Like, any of the Fantastic Four movies kind of left me disappointed. Spider-Man 3, which we mentioned at one point.
Emo.
Daredevil.
I didn't get there with Daredevil, I'll be honest with you. It was what it was.
The director's cut is what saves it for me.
What's that having? I've never seen the director's cut.
God, it's been so long since I've seen it. It kind of filled out the story a little bit more. Gosh, I'll have to go back and watch it now.
Yeah, that was, to be honest with you, it was one of the first times you see that character, and Matt Murdock is one of the best characters, because I think, I mean, you start to see it. But to be perfectly honest with you, you have so many other characters. When you have Peter Parker, who's walking around and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
When you have, who's another one? Well, I'll just go with Peter Parker. When you see Peter Parker walking around, you're constantly saying in the back of your head, put on the suit. Put the suit on.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's go. And, you know, you get excited about that. Matt Murdock's the first one. I'm like, I'm comfortable with where it want to be, you know? Because it's almost like, you know, Daredevil is definitely the second character. I mean, it's not like, it is his alter ego, but I'm comfortable listening to Matt Murdock's storyline. I'm rooting for him.
Yeah.
Because even with Peter Parker's love interest and stuff like that, you don't really get into it as much as you do with somebody like this, a character you're rooting for. That's why, again, I think Matt Murdock, inside of even Ben Affleck's portrayal, I think it works. It still works. People want to rip on it because, I don't know if that's the same time as Geely came out, or maybe it couldn't be Michael Clark Duncan's portrayal. I thought he was pretty good as Kingpin.
Yeah, and I liked that casting right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Jennifer Elektra. Garner.
Yeah, maybe it was the Elektra portrayal, because it was difficult, even because I had toyed with putting, if I had gone top six or top seven, I think Elektra would be seven.
Yeah.
Movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was another one I considered too.
And that even had a lot of the properties from the Hand.
Yeah.
As far as the Ninja Clan and the stuff behind that, but I couldn't get there.
Yeah, and it had Stick in it. A decent portrayal of Stick.
Yeah. Who was Stick in that movie? Was it the same? Did they use the same guy for that as they used in? It seems like it was the same guy.
I don't think it was.
Was that Scott Glenn?
Scott Glenn was the one on the TV show, which he nailed it, and he said he's around for that role for a while. Let's see. Got IMDb right here.
And how did we ever think about this stuff before?
Oh, it was Terrence Stamp.
Yep.
Zod.
Yep. Yep. That is weird. Now that we're kind of getting into the Daredevil piece, I mean, I really don't think there's a better show on TV right now than the Daredevil miniseries. I mean, I watched the Jessica Jones. It was good. You know, I think that in a lot of ways with the stuff they did with using the Purple Man.
Yeah.
That was good. It felt supernatural. It felt like it was like you didn't want to be in the room with him.
Right.
Because it was so brutal. I mean, the one with the kids inside the closet, it really hit home, and I was like, oh man, this guy's evil.
Yeah.
But then later on, you start to see the character development. He's lonely. He's, you know, he wants people to do stuff he wants to do, or wants them to do, because he wants to be a part of something. But I really can't wait to see what they do with Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that Daredevil, and it's always that one moment. For me, the season one, it was episode two.
Yeah.
Where he's rescuing the boy and
the hallway fight.
Yes. It was almost matched by the second one when he's got the stairwell fight in, like, I think it's episode three or four.
Yeah.
But it's better writing. It's raising the bar in everything they do. And nobody's lazy. Nobody's like just out there trying to collect the paycheck.
Yeah.
I don't know. You follow The Flash?
I've not seen anything from season two. I'm waiting for it to show up on Netflix.
On The Flash?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm not going to give it away, but it elevates pretty quick. A lot of good stuff in the
second. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing it. All right. That's it for this week. Be sure to check out Nerdcast on our website. It's nyrdcast.com. We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Nerdcast. Again, it's nyrdcast. We're also on Facebook. Search for it. You'll find us. We're part of the Inside Joke, Outside Voice podcast network. Go to IJOV for other great podcasts. Music today is by the band Whitemore, and this is their song, The North Wind.
The north wind will cut right through me. It cuts through my soul, just like you cut me in two when you walked out and left me all alone. Ice on the windows reminds me I'm much colder alone. But still I sit here and wonder if one day you might just come back home. Always behind me. My best days were always with you, girl. no lamplight to guide. Broken driftwood with no destination, washed out by the winter tides. The December snow fell so quickly, it silenced my cries. Brought by memories, the moment as friends when we said our last goodbyes. Days.